back with the Barologist on Radio 3CR, a summit on leadership, art and disability, driving changes from afar. Good afternoon, my name is Rafael Caleb. This is a new series of Back with the Barologist on 3CR. It's a summit on leadership, art and disability. I've got some very interesting guests lined up for the shows, including Madeline Little, winner of the 2018 Stella Young Award, Luke Donnellan, Minister for Disability in Victoria, Carolyn Bowditch, CEO of Arts Access Victoria, Heidi Everett, Chairperson and Director of Qualia, winner of the 2018-19 Access and Inclusion Awards at Melbourne Fringe, Jeremy Hawkes, recipient of a grant from Create New South Wales, and Rachel Gadsden, an international artist, and a number of other special guests. It'll be showing on Wednesdays, 3 to 4pm. Hope you enjoy the annual Christmas gift from 3CR and the Barologist. Good afternoon. Welcome to a Rambling Barologist stream. You're back with the Barologist. My name is Rafael Caleb. Now, on this year's summer series, the theme is disability, art and leadership. And right now, on the line, I have got Madeline Little, winner of the 2018 Stella Young Award. Welcome to the show, Madeline.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Madeline, what actually is the Stella Young Award?
So the Stella Young Award was started up by Arts Access Victoria in consultation with Stella's friends and family as a way to honour her. And from my understanding, when I applied, it was for a young emerging artist who had begun to harness advocacy and disability pride and identity in their work, in their art. So that's kind of what I've been trying to do with my art. And I was very forthcoming in my application. So I said, you know, I'm not quite there with the identity thing. It's an ever-evolving concept, disability identity and pride. But, I was really honoured to receive the inaugural award last year as a young artist, a young disabled artist in Australia.
Well, it certainly is a fantastic achievement, is that Stella Young was epitomised what disability pride was all about before disability pride came into fashion. I remember Stella from, I met her in around 2006, 2007, and she was involved with a program called No Limits on Channel 31, and then went to RAMP, and then became well known for her great statement of a five-star general of the Crip Army. It's a very illustrious award, Madeline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I'm still kind of in shock, and it's been about a year since it was announced. So, yeah, it's still really just the highest honour in my mind.
Well, it certainly is, and that's something, one of the reasons that I have the pleasure of actually having you on the show, Madeline. Now, the purpose of this year's summer series, it's like a summit meeting talking disability, art, leadership. Now, because you're the winner of the 2018 Stella Young Award, where do you see leadership, art and disability coming together?
It's a massive question. It's what I've been thinking about for a little while since you first mentioned the topic to me. In my mind, it comes down to disabled-led is the way ahead. And I don't just mean, you know, specifically for disability community arts projects, although that they are very important. It's also in terms of all facets of of disability arts and in, even just arts in general, I think that we often misunderstand or underestimate the importance of and the significance of representation of disabled voices. And fundamentally, I think if there's an issue with these broad claims of diversity that don't seem to include disability, and I'm talking even in the mainstream art sector now, across all art forms. So when I think about what the future is for disability and leadership and the arts, I think that the future has a lot of disabled leaders ahead, but it's just a matter of actually taking the time to listen to those voices and uplift them. And I think it's something that the Australian arts sector could do really well to try and improve on.
Look, that's a really good point there, Madeline, is that would you describe arts and having a disability, would they have anything in common?
As in being an artist and having a disability or just your involvement in the arts?
Well, is that with arts and disability, I don't see this as being mutually exclusive. Like, for example, people with a disability, they tend to have a lot of resilience and courage. They're able to do what they can to the best of their abilities. Do you think that's very similar to being a creative person?
I think in a lot of ways, yes. I think that there is a sense of resilience that I have as a disabled person that comes in handy, you know, if you don't get the role that you want or, you know, you're constantly applying for creative developments that you're unsuccessful for. I think that's just part of the business. But I do think that, you know, those traits are quite separate in a lot of ways too. I think that while some of my skills and resources as a disabled person come in handy in my arts career, I also think that there's a tendency for the industry to look at disabled artists and only see their work as disability arts. And I think that that can be quite limiting. There's nothing wrong with disability arts. I think it's fantastic. But if you want to have, you know, a successful career, if you want to actually engage in professional development and, you know, go for a career trajectory that isn't purely based on community arts or arts as therapy models, then I think it's important that we do recognise that even though we have those skills that kind of transfer across both arts and disability, that there sometimes does need to be a separation between the two, I think. And I think that's part of trying to establish a professional career. It's kind of like a survival skill or a survival tactic, if you will, to be in the industry.
Yep, certainly. Now, Madeline, is that what would you how do you see as innovative practices for the arts community where people with a disability have those chances to exercise leadership to make it attractive for people to in the art to come to watch or perform with people with a disability? What do you think the barriers are?
I think the barriers are that primarily the sector, and I think in general just society, prefers to centre non-disabled voices in every conversation because it's safer and it's less likely to challenge people. So I'm going to use a bit of an analogy I thought of the other day. In high school, my history teacher always taught me that you should always go to the primary sources before you go to the secondary sources for all of your evidence. And so if I think about this conversation, disabled people are the primary sources, but the evidence, you know, if it's talking about how we're treated sometimes or how we're excluded from some opportunities, that can be quite confronting and challenging for non-disabled people to hear. And there's a tendency to get a little bit, you know, possibly a bit defensive or double down. And yet the sector still upholds non-disabled people, which I refer to as the secondary sources, in every conversation and every, not every opportunity, but in most opportunities. So I think it comes down to looking at some of the examples across Australia, and Arts Access Victoria is a phenomenal one with Caroline Bowditch at the helm. She's organised some beautiful residencies. I think there's one at the end of October that is disabled-led as well. So it's disabled-led for disabled people. And I think that that's a fantastic example of what we need. We need more of those opportunities where disabled people are leading and welcoming disabled people into the fold. And then I think, you know, of course there are going to come times when maybe there aren't people around who are ready to take up those leadership roles or willing to take up those leadership roles by themselves, in which case I think it should definitely be about really intense interrogation of the purpose behind doing something. Are you, as a non-disabled person, are you getting a bunch of disabled people on stage to make yourself feel good, or are you doing it because they actually want to get up and they want to perform? It's the difference between, okay, what is my right here as a person in this space? And I think a disabled person in a disability arts space has the right to take up that leadership. And I think it's really important to, yeah, just interrogate the reasons why we're doing what we're doing, who we're doing it with, and why we're choosing those people as well. I think it's important that we go back to those primary sources and really, get back to the heart of who we're all doing this for, which is us, the disabled artists.
Look, is that Stella Young would say, Madeline, this is why you were the winner of the 2018 Stella Young Award, is because, like, what does the term ableism mean to you, Madeline?
Oh, how much time do you have?
Well, let's visit this for about a minute and a half with your views on this.
No worries. Ableism to me is it's the hurtful discrimination and oppression that disabled people face on the basis of ability. If we look at the social model of disability, which is the one that I ascribe to, which is I am not disabled because there's anything wrong with my body. I am disabled because society has barriers that disable me. If we look at that model of disability, then when I encounter ableism, it's in the form of, you know, we didn't think that you'd be able to do this role or, you know, perform this position, or we decided that you've got too much on your plate, so we're going to take this responsibility away from you. It's there aren't enough disabled actors, so we weren't going to reach out and ask you to audition. It's in almost every interaction too, I think there's what we talk about internalized ableism, which is the kind of less obvious examples too, where people just have these negative images and stereotypes or preconceptions of disability that really do harm disabled people and stop them from living as freely as they have the right to do.
Look, is that I'm going to buy into this one too. Like, ableism to me goes a lot, it is a very expansive topic. We could actually do a whole year show 24/7 about this, and I guarantee that we would have hundreds of thousands of people who would like to speak about this, so we'll try to keep it fairly simple. For me, regarding, let's say, art, disability art and leadership, one of the big problems is when there is a person who identifies as an able-bodied person or able-bodied normal person, if there's such a thing as normal, and they are getting paid for their role, but they would like to work with people with disability out of the goodness of their heart, and they are not going to give people with disability any pay, and they are not going to let them actually have any say in the process. To me, that is actually fundamentally one of the biggest problems of ableism. It's the recognition that people with a disability lose their choice to actually come self-governing, to actually make those advocacy, to make the sort of roles and decisions where disability arts and leadership comes to play and says, well, if one person's getting paid, then we're all getting paid in one form or the other. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think disabled artists across all art forms deserve to be paid for the professional work and services that they provide. I think it's a fundamental flaw of the sector that isn't happening across the board. And I'm completely with you. And I think just on the notion of decision-making too, I think there's a real difference between, you know, asking the group, hey, do you want to do this? And actually giving them the agency to dictate, no, we've decided we would like to do this. As the disabled people in the room, we want to do this. I think that's why it's so important to go back to what you said. You know, if it's about people doing things out of the goodness of their hearts, non-disabled people doing things out of the goodness of their hearts, I think that's where we have a problem, because that's not enough. That's not appropriate, and it's a little bit disrespectful to the professionalism and the skill of the disabled artists that you have in the room, regardless of what your idea of professionalism is, because we all know that professionalism can be also dictated a little bit by ableist standards, but that's a different story. So, yeah, that's my thought on that one.
Back with the Brightologist. My name's Rafael Caleb, talking with Madeline Little, winner of the 2018 Stella Young Award. Now, Madeline, we were talking about the discrepancies of pay rates, patronising attitudes around people who are of the non-disabled community, making decisions on people of who do have a disability, which is very, very disempowering. Now, one of the things that, as part of your artistic practice, what are some of the ways that people could include others when they're actually directing a play, for example, when some people with disabilities, well, they'd like to actually come and watch your play, but maybe could they use technology to get in to see it?
Yeah, absolutely. So my work, it's a show called Hold, and as part of my research, I was testing accessible theatre practice, which means things like the integration of Australian Sign Language, open captioning, relaxed performance mode. I started experimenting with audio description just to try and embed that into my practice a little bit more, which meant that any person who came to the show, absolutely everyone in the audience saw the captions, every single line in the show. And that was really important to me. I think technology certainly does play a part. That being said, with technology, you are kind of at the mercy of the technology. Sometimes it fails on you, which can be a little devastating. But certainly there are ways to welcome more people in to see your work. And then certainly in terms of creating the work as well, I think I was able to, as a disabled person, dictate what my access requirements are. And then as the director of the show, I built my rehearsal schedule based around what I felt comfortable doing. And that worked out really well. I asked everyone in the group for what they needed to work and function in this space. And I asked all of the non-disabled people as well. And I think what we ended up having was just a very calm and very supportive environment where everyone could work at their own pace, doing what it is that they needed to do. But I do have to say, I think that that's a lot to do with the fact that I am disabled myself and I was leading the process. And I have that knowledge of, you know, how to adapt things or why we might need to adapt things without having to explain it or really interrogate it or justify any of it. It keeps coming back to leadership, really.
Well, okay. Now, what's the, with the monetary that came through with the Stella Young Award, how much use was that did you incorporate that into your artistic practice, or was it for Madeline Little, or was it to actually help accessibility needs, or did it actually help with funding?
I put it straight towards this show. I knew that I was doing this show, and so as soon as I received the $3,000, I put it away. And it went towards making the show. So things like purchasing set items, paying for the printing of the scripts, paying for some of the access requirements as well, such as making sure that we had cold water and snacks on hand. It also went towards paying for the venue and making sure that all of the artists received a stipend as well. It was a research project. Unfortunately, it wasn't a fancy funded production, but I did make sure that everyone got a little something just in recognition of their work, because that was very important to me. But ultimately, yes, the show could not have gone up if we didn't have that $3,000 from the Stella Young Awards. That definitely made it possible to put the show up at all, and to make sure that all of the script writing, all of the directing, all of every aspect of the show came together, and we could have things like the captioning and bring in a shadow interpreter to assist with the Auslan and whatnot. That money went straight towards that show, and I'm very proud of what we were able to do with it.
And on the theme of disability art and leadership, there's a number of people that I'm very proud of. They're right here with me in the studios. And I've got Kelly Whitworth, who's doing technical supervision. She's very kindly volunteered her time to come in to do the technical supervision. She's the host of a program called Ruminations on 3CR that goes to air at midday. And we've got two very brand new panelists, Loz McLeish and Murdoch McLeish, working together in tandem to actually upskill and learn more and gain practical experience. And it's fantastic the way that they're actually doing. And that's part of having an inclusive practice, to have that vision which you had, Madeline, of trying to get people on board so we're all on the same page and actually working together. And an interesting point that you raised, we're going to put this right out there. We don't know who's listening. Madeline, if someone said to you, I've got X amount of dollars for Madeline Little, if you've got a vision for what you'd like to do, how much are you looking, would like, and what would you like to do with it? Your imagination, over to you, Madeline.
You know what? I've just started I'm in the process of starting a peer advocacy and support group for deaf and disabled artists in Southeast Queensland, particularly in Brisbane. So ideally, I think it would be absolutely amazing if the magic money tree gave us $100,000 to establish that and to make sure that everyone was paid for their contributions, to make sure that we had venue space for meetings and we could provide Auslan interpreters and audio describers. As an extension of that, I think it would be incredible if I could have, say, $250,000 for the next few years of creating projects. Approximately $40,000 a year, just enough to kind of be a low enough wage to keep me going. I don't need diamonds, I don't need Ferraris, but just enough to keep me going so that I could maintain a creative practice, continue writing shows, continue creating work with other deaf and disabled artists. But then I was thinking about it too, and I don't have an exact number on it, but I think it would be absolutely incredible if the powers that be could invest money into tertiary institutions for the specific purpose of making the creative courses more accessible to deaf and disabled artists. I think that would be phenomenal, just in terms of creating more career pathways for deaf and disabled artists who can't currently access those courses at university or at TAFE. But then also, you've got more deaf and disabled skilled artists. They've got the qualification in front of them. They're a lot harder to ignore if there's more of them. So I think it would really force the hand of the industry to take notice. And that's why I think it would be incredible to make sure that that funding would become a reality for all of those tertiary institutions. I think that would make a huge change as well.
So is it what we're actually looking for, someone out there in the universe who's got a six-figure amount to help make Madeline Little's dreams come true as far as the inclusive practice, and as winner of the Stella Young Award, it would be a very, very good start. Now, are you affiliated with any organisations that might have tax-deductible status?
Absolutely, I am. I am a core ensemble member of Indelibility Arts in Queensland. So people can definitely donate to them. If you just search Indelibility Arts on Google, you'll find them. So you can definitely donate through there. Otherwise, you know what? It's not even just directly about me. I think if you've got an organisation in your state, so like Arts Access Victoria, Access Arts in Queensland, DADA in Western Australia, definitely donate to your local organisations too that champion accessible art practices. I think that's really important for all deaf and disabled artists, not just me.
It certainly is. Now, Madeline, while we're in this part of personal plugs, because it's about disability art and leadership, What would you do in this scenario? There's an organisation, it's run by 100% people who are part of the able-bodied community, not the disability community. They are getting paid and they would like to contact Madeline Little to come in, but you're not going to get paid. What do you do?
I don't do it. I don't do it, and I send a very sternly written email as to why that is fundamentally inappropriate. I think it's important that deaf and disabled artists are recognised for their skills and their contributions, and I think not offering me a fee at all is a big red flag, and that would say that they're not serious about whatever it is, whatever project it is that they want to do. Different story if they come to me and they ask for a quote. I'm happy to provide a quote. And certainly there are community organisations who might not be able to pay the full figure. I'm happy to negotiate. But as a general rule, no, I deserve to be paid for the skills and the qualifications and the experience that I bring to the table. And I think it's okay to be very firm about that.
Madeline, that is such a fantastic answer. Because as you're one of the leaders in the disability arts and leadership, this is the kind of leadership which we really, really need to say, well, is that this is actually unacceptable, is that it's no different for going to, let's say, a market research group. People will get paid to a market research group. People with disabilities are offering their experiences. It's the same thing. It's about achieving equality right across the board, not just at representation, but in monetary terms for people with a disability to get the same opportunities as everybody else does.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for that, Madeline. Now, is that I've got a little bit of trouble with this time because I cannot read this clock. We've got 3 minutes to go. Well, is that in that case, Madeline, is that can you please put out your contact details if you would like to give them? Is that one organisation how they can get in contact, if listeners would like to get in contact with, to donate, to collaborate, for you as a guest speaker?
Yes, absolutely. So the first port of call would be my website, which is madelinelittle.com. I'm going to spell it because I spell it trickily. It's madelinelittle.com. From there, you can find a bunch of contact information. You can see that I am available for public speaking arrangements, so you can contact me for those opportunities there. I'm also available for advocacy for deaf and disabled artists. So if you just need someone to talk to who gets it and you need some help figuring things out, I'm more than happy to lend my skills there. And for fellow deaf and disabled artists, I do that for free because I think it's important that we support one another. You've also got the information about the peer advocacy and support group that I'm starting up in Brisbane. So that information's on there as well. Some examples of my writing are up there, so please have a read, including a recent article that I did for Mamma Mia on internalised ableism. I would highly recommend giving that a read.
Madeline, we're actually going to have to wind it right up here. We're really running very quickly out of time. But it's Madeline Little. Thank you very much for your time, Madeline, for being a guest on Around the Embryologist Stream, talking about disability, art and leadership. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much to Loz and Murdoch McLeish for panelling. Thank you very much to Kelly Whitworth for her technical assistance. We're going to go out with a song, Self-Resurrection by MJ Warrior. Thank you very much.
Self-Resurrection. Lady MJ Warrior. Had my own place at the age of 16. Quit full-time college cause I couldn't afford to live. Started working factory, sticking stickers on boxes, catching 6 buses a day to get to a job. Shit, all the nosy hats used to terrorise me. Why aren't you at school or living with mommy? People passing judgment cause I was just a teen. But I battled on like warrior, focusing on big dreams. Self-resurrection, forgiveness and redemption. No hate, no hate in my heart. If only they know.
the truth, would they dare to question? They're phony and hating you if I stood flare. Too pretentious, it's cold when you're breaking through. But I love air of adventure. Miss Lonely was taking brute or hooks in prayer of affection. Flipped over and made to do things I care to censor. Gets all around the room.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM, the voice of the community.
Good afternoon. My name is Rafael Caleb. This is Back with the Barologist, a summer series on disability art and leadership. And right now on the line, I have the Honourable Minister for Disability, Luke Donnellan. Welcome to the show, Luke.
Thanks a lot, Rafael. Pleasure to be with you.
Now, so we're talking about art, disability and leadership. Now, as the Minister for Disability, how important is art to people with a disability?
Oh, very important. As you know, in your own situation, you have a great love of writing, performance and things like that. And, you know, like anybody, people love expressing themselves through art. And it's about, I think, more than anything else, providing those opportunities, because there are so many barriers for people with disabilities, whether it be physical, social, and so many others, that, you know, it's just important more than anything else that we as a government recognise those barriers are there, and more than anything else, trying to assist with breaking them down. So, you know, for argument's sake, the state government's just actually run, you know, leadership programs with Leadership Victoria and the Disability Leadership Institute to train people to be leaders for the disability community in terms of, you know, seeking better services, for argument's sake, seeking better access to art, seeking better access to employment, seeking better access to so many areas where there is discrimination and barriers against people with disabilities, and that is one in five people in our community.
Yeah, Peter, that with the one in five people is that, I like to put it in another perspective, is that there's 25 million people approximately in Australia. That's 5 million people in Australia that do have a disability rather than the one in five. To me, the one in five actually does minimise it at a lot more.
I know what you mean. Yeah, look, when you look at the overall figure, it is substantial. And, you know, that's near enough to the metropolitan population of Melbourne. So that is literally all of Melbourne. When you consider that figure of 5 million people. So it's a lot, and, you know, there is so much more we can do as a government, as a community. I was down in Geelong last week with Christine Cousins, and Christine Cousins is a member for Geelong, but she's working on, along with Deakin University, City of Greater Geelong and like, of identifying those barriers and how we work together to overcome them. That, a lot of that will have to do with the physical environment in Geelong, because Geelong wants to be the most inclusive, the most welcoming community for people with disabilities, both in terms of tourism and access to the arts and all those things. But it's interesting to see all these groups come together, including the architectural department of Deakin, to identify where the problems lie and how we're going to overcome them, in terms of, sometimes it might be the Department of Transport is not engaging enough with my department in terms of how their design for public transport is carried through and the design model. So, you know, it sort of just highlighted to me that it is, we need to all work together as government institutions with the private sector and the like to actually deal with, you know, to make sure we're being inclusive. Absolutely.
Now, is that with inclusion, that what about, let's say, with people with, my understanding is that for people with a disability, if they have an opportunity to go overseas because they're doing a residency, let's say for 3 months or 6 months, if they're on a disability support pension, when they go overseas, under the current legislation, that they're allowed to leave Australia for approximately 6 weeks, otherwise they would leave their disability support pension.
Yeah, that would be, look, I'm not absolutely certain of that. I do know that happens with the pensions, just generally. So I would presume they've applied that same rule to the disability pension, but I guess the real issue here is how many people have been pushed off the age and the disability pension as well into Newstart. So you'd also, there's also the issue of whether people who should be on a disability pension have also been moved off it, separate from the issue of why would we take a disability pension off somebody when they've just been away for 6 weeks, so say for work, or, you know, for argument's sake, they might be in that back-to-back theatre group that's, you know, travels the world with its plays and the like, and the all
ability. Yeah, but that's down in Paston Geelong there as well.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, for argument's sake, you know, why would you want to punish someone when they're still, you know, I'm not being silly, they will still have a disability when they come back. It's not as if the disability has diminished. They're still going to need the payments. They still need to be supported. I mean, it's, to me, it appears mean-spirited.
Yeah, first look, and that's one of the difficulties that I have is that, for example, that from a creative point of view, that there's a person that has recently gone overseas. They do have a permanent disability. They did start an online petition regarding people with a disability going overseas to take up creative residencies to see if they could get the same exemptions that people with a disability who were sports people did, and that would seem to be an exception to the rule. People with a sports people with disability were given an exemption for representing Australia, but people who were very creative did not receive that exemption, and that's a really difficult issue.
That's ridiculous, and that's pretty, well, it's totally inconsistent in its application of the principle. So, in other words, yes, we'll support sports people, but we won't support arts people, which is, you know, genuinely a bit of an issue with this country, full stop. You know, that we have a sort of a real focus on sport. We don't have enough of a focus on our sciences and our arts, but to have an inconsistency in that approach is just simply unfair. I mean, it is, I'd actually be taking that up with the federal minister for government services, because that's just simply unfair. You know, that's, it's not, unfortunately, it's not an area I could change, but I'm very supportive of the idea of actually having consistency in application so that people don't miss out. Why should, if someone's an artist spending 6 weeks overseas representing Australia, be treated any differently from a sportsman who's 6 weeks overseas, representing Australia and doing a great job? You know, that's simply unfair and unreasonable.
Yeah, look, as I said, it's a very difficult area, and it's one that I don't believe there's a straightforward answer to it either. However,
no, there's probably not a straightforward answer, but the original issue with the pension was, this is just generally with the pension, was that they didn't want people receiving this pension and spending, you know, most of the year overseas and not being in Australia. Okay, I could possibly accept that, but when we're talking about 6 weeks, we're not talking about an extensive period over time, and it's not as if the disability disappears overseas for when the person comes back. They are still going to need to be supported by a disability pension, and they need that support, and that's unreasonable when you do it, treat people differently who are going over there for sport.
Right, now, one of the problems which people with a disability do encounter with organisations generally, not just in a creative sense, and that is organisations where there is not representation by people with a disability at, let's say, at a board level to actually make decisions to bring into disability culture, disability pride with disability values. It becomes almost like tokenism.
Yeah, look, I think there is a total lack of understanding unless you have people with disabilities on your board of how to design, support and get people employed and get them stabilised in that environment. You know, not stabilised, but give them the supportive environment to achieve so much of what they can. So in many ways, you know, there's a need to have the voice of people with disabilities on boards when people have a focus, you know, and should have a focus on getting people with disabilities and all these skills into their organisation. And I think we've got about, in I think approximately in our department, about 4% of people identified with a disability. Now, we believe there's a fair few more. In other words, probably another 1 or 1 and a bit percent. We have a commitment to 6%, but, you know, I still think that's underdone, and I think, you know, Department of Human Services is probably better equipped than most to do it, but, you know, then again, I still think we're a long way off where we need to be, and at least we've got some specialist advice in the house, because we've got people with disabilities, we've got, you know, committees with people with disabilities on the committees, like my Disability Advisory Council. All the members have all got a broad range of disabilities and a broad range of experiences, which actually helps, in other words, draw attention to where we're not paying enough attention to, if that makes sense. In other words, you know, to poke us at the right time to get it right.
Yep, sure. And look, again, too, is that one of the things that Arts Access Victoria did approximately 14 or 15 months ago, their CEO, Carolyn Bowditch, does identify with having a disability, and it can be one of the problem questions at job interviews to disclose whether the person has got a disability or not, does not have a disability. It's, again, a personal choice. If a person doesn't disclose they have a disability, then the statistics would be on the low, I would tend to think they'd be on the lower side. And if they did disclose they have a disability, quite often, sometimes people will not get past to that point of getting the interview to begin with.
Look, there's terrible attitudes for people with disabilities and terrible attitudes for people in ageing. You know, and, you know, I've unfortunately got two portfolios whereby community attitudes, put it mildly, crappy, and totally lacking in an understanding of the capacities of people with disabilities. So, you know, there is just so much capacity there that is not being utilised, and it's because of the ordinary attitudes. And I'd say in many ways that also applies to people who are ageing. You know, it's that sort of attitude of once you're aged, just be quiet and you've got not much more to contribute. Well, I'd say a similar attitude, you know, in many work environments is it's applied to people with disabilities. And, you know, as we know, you know, the reliability, the consistency of performance and all that is all there. So why wouldn't you want someone who's reliable? Why wouldn't you want someone who always turns up? Why wouldn't you want someone who's always enthusiastic and does a great job on top of all that? You know, so I think it's the attitudes which are really the biggest problem in our communities.
Well, I said, let's take it in a much bigger, it's a very general discussion, that, for example, Pablo Picasso was still painting with the same degree of precision when he was in his actual 90s. Now, from a disability perspective, that quite often people with who are very creative, that age is not that mandatory retirement at age 67. It's a profession which people can continue on past that actual age. Now, to my way of thinking, that if there's 5 million people with a disability around Australia, if there is a Minister for Arts, I would like to put it out there about the possibility of having a specific Minister for the disability arts industry, which I think in itself...
Yeah, that's a possibility. I mean, obviously, we mix, you know, at the state level, we've got myself with disability and Martin Foley with arts, and obviously Martin Foley has been the Minister for Disabilities, which helps enormously because he's got a big degree of knowledge across both, and obviously has set up, you know, various programs, with like the Creative State and others, with in mind of inclusion, because he's been both, you know, worked in both areas. But that's not often, you know, not often the case, unfortunately, that you have someone who is very well versed in the disability sector, but is now also incredibly well versed in the art sector, and can try and bring the two together. with programs, you know, like Telematters and things like that, that, you know, Martin's had a sort of an overall vision of what he can do, which is probably better than anyone else has done, you know, to date, in terms of having a good understanding of both portfolios, which is just so useful to ensure that we you know, stimulate that creative capacity that people with disabilities have, you know, and, you know, here is, you know, I just think that's essential.
Look, is it some of the great programs that have been around arts and disability that have come up over recent years that Melbourne Fringe Festival has done a lot more over the past 2 or 3 years about including people with a disability. This year, in 2019, they, for the first time ever, they had access champions specifically for volunteers to look out for people with a disability, see on how they could be included in participating in the festivals. There was Into the Limelight, which was with Paran Mission, where people with a disability were given the opportunity to act under the guidance of professionals. And a couple of those films were showing at the St Kilda Film Festival. People like Phil Hetzender, who's the creative director of Wild at Heart, he has got the Order of Australia in 2018 for his services. But culturally speaking, disability and art leadership, people like Heidi Everett put together Mojo Film Festival, which is a film festival for people with schizophrenia that happens on the 24th of May each year. And Lucinda McFarlane came together and put together Disability Pride Back Is in Footscray. They're the type of things, I think, where arts can make a big difference to people with a disability. What are your thoughts?
Look, absolutely. And I saw it this year at the Indian Film Festival in Mitu Borwick. Lang, who runs the Indian Film Festival, one of the special short film sections was with specialist actors who had Down syndrome, who'd done their own films. So there was, I think, three different films with actors with Down syndrome, and also produced by actors and producers as well with disabilities. And it was absolutely stunning, and just look, it was a delight to watch. And Mitu Borwick, who is the the producer of the whole of the Indian Film Festival, is just so good at embracing that. And it just highlighted to me that, you know, this needs to be pushed because of the dignity and the joy, and the success on that night was second to none. Beautiful moving short films. Hopefully people, you know, apart from myself, who went along would have got the opportunity. I mean, there was a lot of people in the room who would have seen a lot of these short clips of these films, which were just magnificent.
Yep, like with Disability Pride Is Back, which is an art mural over in Footscray, not only was that an Australian first of people with a disability taking ownership in a public place to create a mural saying that people have got a disability in the community. It was actually a first in the world.
Interesting. I wasn't aware of that. Yeah. Well, it's a bit like that, you know, the Arts Access Victoria, that Super Creative Victoria, where they did the Choose Art, which sort of allowed people to identify inclusive and accessible arts programs, which is now a nationwide online facility for people to check. But, you know, that was just a small program, which is the first anyone had done. It's done in Victoria now. Nationally, it's been funded, and as it should be, because, you know, why should people with disabilities miss out on opportunities to, you know, to be involved or to go and see art? I mean, it's just ridiculous. And, you know, to be blunt, a lot of the time it's actually access. You know, to be blunt, for people with wheelchairs and things like that, which many venues simply haven't addressed, and that includes some of our own at a state government, which is a problem, which is simply a matter of when these designs were done, they weren't done properly to be inclusive of all those people with disabilities, and that's, you know, that's something we've just got to get better.
Yeah, well, is that now, as Minister for Disability, Luke, now, really putting this question out there, As the Minister for Disability, what is the one big thing you would like to achieve for people with a disability in this role?
Change of attitudes to the general community, to people with disabilities. In the same way, I would say the same with aged, my aged care portfolio, it is the attitudes that I hate, the attitudes that need to change, and recognition of the skills and the capacities of people with disabilities. Look at the ability, don't consider the, you know what I mean? Focus on the abilities of individuals, not what the barriers are to them achieving what they want to achieve. And I think that's, if over time I can have a little bit of improvement of that over the next 3 years, I'll feel I've moved things along a little. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of programs we can run and a lot of things we could do to support that. But above all else, if we could change attitudes, I think that would move things along faster than anything else.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Luke, for your time. Much appreciated.
Lovely. It's great to talk, and thank you very much for the opportunity to say a few words, Rafael. Thank you very much.
Okay, we'd like to thank the Minister for Disability, Luke de Mellon, for taking the time to speak about arts, disability and leadership. Thank you very much for your time, and we wish you well with your over the next 3 years. Thank you very much.
Pleasure, Rafael. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Well, thank you very much for listening to the first broadcast of Back with the Barologist Summer Series 2019 and 2020 on 3CR. I'd like to thank our guest today, Madeline Little, 2018 winner of the Stella Young Award, and the Honourable Luke de Mellon, Minister for Disability in Victoria. I'd like to thank our panellists, and there's been a number of them for this series. Loz and Murdoch McLeish, thank you very much for your time. Stella Barton from 3SYN Radio, she's a volunteer there. Thank you very much for coming to the studio. I'd like to thank very much Andy Britt, the techno wizard, who has volunteered his time. He's a sound engineer by trade. We really would like to thank Andy very much for his technical expertise on putting the whole series together. Kelly Whitworth, who has come in for all her training of Loz and Murdoch McLeish. Thank you very much for your time. We really should have a very big round of applause for everybody that's been involved. Thank you very much. On next week's show, I am talking with Heidi Everett, the director and producer of Qala, the winner of the 2019 Access and Inclusion Award at Melbourne Fringe Festival. And I'm also talking with Jeremy Hawkes, the recipient of the Create New South Wales Grant 2018-19 Fellowship. Thank you very much for listening. We're going to go out with a song. And over the course of these interviews, the federal government has taken away the arts portfolio and made it part of the Department of Roads, Infrastructure and Arts. So we're going to go out with a very fitting song with a message for the federal government. Do Something by JJ Solomon and Friends. Thank you very much. We will be back on the 26th of December. Keep listening. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. And keep listening to 3CR. If you don't think the revolution has started, you're listening to the wrong station. My name is Rafael Caleb. So hear from you next time. Thank you.
Ding.
Day, day.